The following programming is sponsored by Doreen Taylor Music, LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
What's going on?
Hey, hey, USA, what's going on? Welcome to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, setting the scene each week to help you find out what's happening in music, TV, movies, sports, the arts, and everything in between. We're proud to be syndicated on stations coast to coast and originating right here in the city of brotherly love on Philadelphia's number one talk radio station, Talk 860 WWDB. Get insider access and go behind the scene on our show's official website, thescenewithdoreen.com, and watch us each and every week on the nationally syndicated television show, The Daily Flash, available in every major city in the U.S. Happy Halloween to most of our people who celebrate that holiday, and happy Halloween to my incredible producer, Matt Mynarek. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Doreen. Happy Halloween to you, too.
Boo, boo, boo.
Boo?
Boo-hoo. No, not boo-hoo.
Oh, boo.
Boo.
Oh, that was supposed to be a ghost?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's better.
That's better, yeah.
You're a better witch than ghost.
I'm a very good witch, as most of my exes will tell you. I'm an excellent witch. But yeah, so, you know, it got me thinking, because I don't dress up anymore. I'm a little old, and I don't really go to a lot of parties anymore. But, you know, yeah, back in the day, did you dress up as a kid?
Oh, of course. I dressed up as, Lion-O from Thundercat.
Oh.
My dad made me a sword out of wood.
Was that just last year?
Yes, it was last year.
It's this year. You're lying. It's this year.
I was Luke Skywalker one year.
So you like swords, like Luke's lightsaber.
Well, everybody loved the lightsaber. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
everybody wanted
cool.
the lightsaber.
Even girls, they liked the lightsaber. Yeah, it was cool.
Always cool. What did you dress up as?
I was always very not creative. I was like a princess remember, I grew up in Buffalo. So our, end of October, you could have snow on the ground. So you literally would have this really cute little costume and then have 20 layers of coats on top. So you just go as like a coat rack. That's sort of what everybody goes
and
as.
You'd have this big coat, but then the only part of your costume you would see is like a little tutu
on the bottom. But then, my mom was overprotective, so she would always, have like big snow boots and everything. So literally, it did not matter what I went as. It was just getting the candy, I guess, which my dad would eat most of it.
That's what it's all about for kids.
Yeah. But would your parents eat your candy?
Not really.
Yeah, my dad would eat a lot of my candy.
My two youngest, they don't even eat candy. They don't even like candy.
That's a really good thing, actually.
Yeah, they don't like soda. They don't drink soda.
Wow, that's
candy.
Really good.
So they go out just for the experience and... Well, they're old, too old now to do it. But when they did, they would separate the candy and give out certain... ones to whoever likes certain things. So I always like the Reese's Pieces.
Yes, those are good. The peanut butter cups. Yes, yeah. I like those too.
Anything Reese's is good.
So question for you. So, really good, important question. We ask the good questions here. When is it too old to go out trick-or-treating anymore?
I think once...
once you get married.
Once you get married, yeah.
You're allowed to vote.
I think once you're maybe in high school or something. I don't know. Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe sophomore in high school. What is that, about 15 or something?
Yeah, I think you 15, 16.
That might be a little too old.
I think once you have your driver's license or you can get your permit, I think that's probably the end for you, maybe.
That's a good age.
Yeah, that should probably be. But I know I see kids going around sometimes. I don't even call them kids because I'm not sure. They're like young adults now. They come out and they want the candy. And I'm like, really? I guess maybe they like it's better than other things they could be doing, I guess, as long as they're just getting the candy and not TPing the house and stuff. But good for them that they want to do something at least good. I don't mind giving them. If they want a stupid Kit Kat bar, I'll give them a Kit Kat bar.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So you know what, though? This year, I think I should dress up as our guest today because she is probably one of the most fashionable icons that I've ever seen in the music industry.
This would be a good Halloween costume.
Yes, instantly recognizable when you hear her voice or you see her. You know exactly who it is.
Yeah, well, let's get to it then.
All right. Well, happy Halloween, Matt.
Happy Halloween.
Today on The Scene with Doreen, I have joining me one of the most famous redhead bombshells of all time. Founding member of the groundbreaking band The B-52s, singer, songwriter, and musician Kate Pearson made her mark as one half of the girl power duo at the forefront of the group for over 50 years. There probably isn't a person alive who hasn't heard her vocals on hits like Rock Lobster, Private Idaho, Rome, and of course, the mega hit Love Shack. Take a listen.
Ah!
Oh, this is where it's at. Because after wrapping up the B-52's farewell tour last year and adding dates to an ongoing Las Vegas residency at the Venetian, Kate Pearson is now letting her solo voice soar on her latest album, Radio and Rainbows. A multi-talented artist in so many genres, Kate's new album has been called dazzling, pristine, and a fun time. And I am definitely going to have a very fun time chatting with the redhead musical goddess on the show today. So without further ado, hello, Kate. What's going on?
Hey, Doreen. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my pleasure.
I'm sitting in a very sunlit little room at my house in Woodstock, New York, and trying to avoid like direct sunbeams here, but it's just beaming in. And
I think part of that is you. I think you give off that radiating energy and that beautiful sunbeam.
Thank you so much. I try to radiate joy. I mean, I don't have to try. I do. I'm a naturally positive person.
You are. You are.
Luckily. And I think a lot of songs I write reflect that. And also the B-52 songs, even our disaster songs are positive. They have a, you know, positive twist to them. And Private Idaho is one of those kind of dark disaster songs, The Hidden Driveway, Head of a Stranger, all these kind of strange things it conjures up. But but it still makes people feel good.
Yes. And shout out. You are my Jersey girl, born in Weehawken and raised in Rutherford, New Jersey. I am a Jersey girl, too.
Where are you from?
I'm living in Mullica Hill, which is pretty much outside of Philly. That's in like Gloucester County all the way down by Cape May almost. We're down south of the state.
Wow.
Yes, but you're the cool part of Jersey.
I don't know. Fred's from the shore. I think that's the cool part of New Jersey, but I don't know. I was raised near New York City. So when I was sort of a pre-hippie chick, sort of a beatnik chick almost, I used to go into New York City, take the bus, and my friends and I would go to the Village and, you know, buy dangly earrings. And I even played at a folk club once.
Oh, very cool. One of your first things, wasn't it? You were writing folk songs and stuff back in the day. Like, wasn't that your first experience? You had a little folk band?
Yes, it was called the Sun Donuts. And I grew up during that era when folk music that was the hit music, really. Mm-hmm. Folk rock. And then, of course, the Beatles swept in. But topical songs, Bob Dylan, of course, and I mean, Joni Mitchell was hugely influential and psychedelic music, too, of course. But an era when there were topical songs about politics, about real kind of things, that really turned me on to, I guess, it politicized me, listening to Bob Dylan and other artists who were political, kind of hearing about real life events that happened and trying to correct the wrongs, you know, to make it right, like a lot of Bob Dylan songs did.
Yes.
Anyway, we'll go all into that. But
no,
I think,
no.
You know, it made me aware of what's around me. And speaking of Love Shack that you just played, and I love a good medley, that song we just played at this Jimmy Carter tribute in Atlanta.
Oh, very nice. And yeah, he just turned 100. He just had his 100th birthday.
And they have early voting in Georgia now. And he said he was just hanging on there to vote for Kamala Harris. And he was able to do that. So I'm very excited about that.
That is wonderful. And you did have quite the journey. Because before the B-52s, you were a journalism major at Boston University.
Yes. So that didn't go too far.
Well, you how long were you doing that? And then where, because, from like 1976, you're all in a Georgia bar, or 1975 even, chatting over drinks, and poof, the B-52s are born.
Well, like many journeys, it was a circuitous one. And after college, Kent State happened. I wanted to get out of America. I went and traveled through Europe with a friend, and then I was alone for a while, and I stayed for almost a year and a half. And when I came back to the United States, it's too long a story to tell, but I wound up in Athens, Georgia, and I worked as a paste-up artist on the Athens Banner Herald.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a little bit of my journalism major to use there. But then the band got together. We jammed one night over a flaming volcano. And we didn't have money for food, so we just had the five straws. Actually, we had six straws because our friend Owen Scott joined us. And then we went to his house to jam. He went to write a paper. He's a clinical psychologist now. Mm-hmm. So we went to the basement and jammed and came up with this song called Killer Bees. And then we just knew we were a band then. And it kind of set the whole template for how we write together by jamming.
That is amazing. It just to all fall together. A lot of those things in my research of you were kind of like things that just you can't deny, like the name of the band. I read that the B-52s was actually conceived in a dream with Keith.
Keith Strickland thought of that. He had an idea of these women with beehive hairdos playing organs, and someone whispered in his dream, "Who's that band?" And a voice answered, "The B-52s." So he suggested that name, and we just thought, wow, it's original, and it's also supposed to be, it was a slang term for beehive hairdos in the South, or at least among our group. It was kind of like a nose cone, and so that stuck.
Yes, and it's kind of cool. Now, did nobody argued it? It kind of just, he said it and everybody was like, yeah, that's the name. I mean, it was sort of serendipitous. It kind of just all came together.
There are many things we agree on. I mean, a lot of things artistically, you know, everyone has an opinion, but that thing just was yes. Everyone said, yes, that's it. And we actually thought of changing it when we toured in Japan. One of the first tours we did was in Japan, and we thought, oh my God, that name is not really going to fly there. But people sort of got it. The people that came to the, they made a poster with them dropping wigs instead of bombs. So they got it.
Yes, they got it. Now, but I also heard that that was the only country where it wasn't a hit. Love Shack wasn't a hit.
Exactly. And I think it's because of the name. I really do think that.
Well, that's weird. It would have to be if it was everywhere else and
I know,
not
everywhere
there.
Else.
Yeah. You would have to think that it had something to do with that. But you know what? It was something that has become pop culture history. And you know what? Oh, well. So one country didn't get it.
I'm sad because I love Japan. And I actually toured I was part of a Japanese band called Nina. And we toured all over Japan, and it was on Sony. It went to number one. And so I got a chance to go back to Japan. And people remembered Bigo Juni. They remembered the B-52s. So I guess it made some impact there. But
yes. Well, you've made an impact everywhere. I mean, and also I do have to mention the B-52s have an undeniably distinct and instantly recognizable fashion sense. And I want to know, because I couldn't find the answer to this, who was the mastermind responsible for the styling and overall image of the band?
Well, I think that's the genius of, if I may say genius, together we're a genius, and is that we never really have a leader. We never had a leader, and no one ever made any decisions about fashion except let's just go to the thrift store and find whatever crazy wild outfits we can find. And there was a wig box in this thrift store called the Potter's House in Athens. And we'd actually, you know, fight over this 25-cent wig. The aim was not to look beautiful. It was just to, you know, just be, I don't know, just fun. We did it for fun. And we wore crazy outfits that we found at the thrift store. So I think that was kind of happening in a lot of small cities and towns in America, this kind of discovery of thrift store clothing and kind of early punk stuff. So it was just nothing that we still don't coordinate. And somehow magically, we're all wearing stripes or all wearing gold. So
you all have like-minded individuals that come together as a group. I don't want to say it's, again, the serendipitous thing. That's something beyond just a band where there's a power here behind it, driving it. And think about it, how over 50 years. I mean, there has to be something driving this.
It's a mind meld.
I love it. Well, today on The Scene with Doreen, I am a very shiny, happy person chatting with the wonderfully talented singer, songwriter, and musician Kate Pearson from the B-52s and so much more. When we return, we talk about some of her incredible collaborations and her creative process. Stay right there because we'll be right back.
Choosing the right insurance company can be complex and confusing. At Leonard O'Neill Insurance Group, we don't just sell you an insurance policy. We sell you a lifetime of peace of mind, service, and satisfaction. A second-generation, family-owned and operated business in South Jersey, we're committed to protecting you and your family. With over 2,000 clients in the tri-state area, we are your local, trusted insurance experts specializing in business, life and health, and personal insurance. Contact Leonard O'Neill Insurance Group today to learn how we can get started on your insurance journey together. Visit www.log-insurance.com or call 856-627-2600.
Hey guys, are you loving the show? Do you want to see more of The Scene?
Well, guess what? You can, because The Scene with Doreen is now a weekly segment on the nationally syndicated television show, The Daily Flash. The Daily Flash is your daily destination for trending stories, celebrity updates, and industry highlights. And it's now your home to watch The Scene with Doreen. You can turn us on and watch every Wednesday across the country. Check your local times and listings at thescenewithdoreen.com. Welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, and I am chatting today with the incomparable, instantly recognizable voice of the new wave group, the B-52's Kate Pearson. Out of break, you heard a little clip of REM's 1991 hit single, Shiny Happy People, featuring Kate's vocal prowess. Kate, you've said that you find your power in collaboration with other artists like REM, Sia, Iggy Pop, The Ramones, Debbie Harry. The list is quite extensive. Some artists are guarded in their creative process. So what makes the process of creating with others empowering for you?
Well, I think because the B-52s, I mean, when I was in the Sun Donuts and after that even, I wrote my own songs. But once the B-52s started and it was this, like we said, a mind meld collaboration, I kind of felt like I couldn't write outside of the band. And it was in my own head, really, because I tried to write. But then the band had a lull for a while. We took breaks. That's one reason I guess we were able to stay together for so long, because we took long breaks. And I started writing a solo album. This is one that never came out, although one song on my new album is from that way back time. It's called Always Till Now. Mm-hmm. And I just think because the band collaborates, the B-52s write together by jamming. And I kind of use that method with other collaborations. And once the B-52s did this Japan project too, I just felt, oh, I can collaborate with anyone. If I can collaborate with a band that we don't speak the same language. Right. And it just really worked. It just worked so well. And I felt like, wow, I can collaborate with anyone. Mm-hmm. And I love doing that. I love that kind of creative process, the creative juices flowing together. But I've also been writing some songs just on my own, just with piano and guitar. And, you know, I love doing that, too. But there's just something about collaborating. And it's just a thrill when you get together with someone and they have their idea. Most of the time, wore my previous solo record, guitars and microphones, and this record as well, the collaborator would have the instrumentation. And that's the way Cosmic Thing was written after Ricky passed away in 1985, and we took a big break because we didn't know if we were coming back together again. But when we did, Keith wound up doing all the instrumentation, and then Fred and Cindy and I would jam on the vocals, melodies, lyrics, the harmonies, and you know, then he would make like a track. So I think that really works well for me. I get inspired by hearing chord changes. And speaking of Shiny Happy People, I just am getting together a live show. I've done two live shows so far, and we included Shiny Happy People. It was so much fun to sing it.
Good, good. It's a very iconic song for you. I mean, I know that it also introduced you again to another new generation. You keep reinventing yourself over time, and now you're into, you know, with Michael Stipe and REM, and I mean, it's like a whole different kind of genre, even.
I know... REM kind of tried to disavow that song because it was just not really representative of most of their work, which is mostly pretty serious. But
it is.
You got to admit, it really makes you happy, that song.
It does. I got to say, before even meeting you today, I have always used that as an example. Like, it's a generic, like, you know, you say Band-Aid or Q-tip, and it means like all of cotton swabs. Well, whenever I talk about happy songs versus more of the melancholy, darker, you know, minor keys, I always say Shiny Happy People song. That's like that is what I use as the reference. So it has broken through to its own kind of living entity at this point.
And the video is super fun, too.
Oh, it's great.
The video, and Michael Stipe did the choreography and everything. So
it's a throwback to, like, I mean, I don't know if Pee Wee Herman was even an inspiration at that time, but Pee Wee's Playhouse. I just feel a little bit of Pee Wee in that.
Maybe, because I loved Pee-wee's Playhouse. Yes. I would get up, no matter how much I partied on Friday night, I would get up Saturday to watch Pee-wee's Playhouse. And we were able to become friends with Paul Rubens later on.
Okay.
It's very sad that he passed, but yes. I love him.
Mm-hmm. And Miss Yvonne, the bouffant. I mean, a little bit of the B-52, but not, you know, a little bit of that, an homage.
Yes, for sure.
But speaking of inspiration, though, fun fact that I found out, and I want to confirm with you, I heard that your tune Rock Lobster inspired John Lennon to get back into the studio after his hiatus to record what would become his final album, Double Fantasy. Is that true?
Yes, that's true. I mean, of course, we didn't know it till later when we read the interview. We heard there was an interview in Playboy and some other publication where he told the story of hearing he was in a club. I think it was in Jamaica or the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And he heard the Cindy's part at the end of Rock Lobster, which is totally Yoko Ono inspired, because we all love Yoko Ono. And Cindy did that. And also the fish sounds, where there were a lot of in there. Mm-hmm. And he heard that and he knew. He said, you know, to the wife, grab the guitar. We're going to, you know, our time has come back again, because people get you now. People get us now.
That's amazing.
And there was just I could not believe that. He is so much my hero. I love the Beatles, but John Lennon was my favorite. And we all love Yoko, too. And she, we had a 25th anniversary concert, and she came on stage and sang with us. And she did that whole thing at the end of Rock Lobster and
It had to be, you must be desensitized at this point to like these pinch me moments. I mean, your life is so amazing and all the experiences, but that had to be a pinch me moment to have her on there singing that song in full circle.
It's still pinching me. It's still pinching me right now. I mean, it's something I can't even believe. You know, it's just when you feel like somehow you're, you know, musical hero, and not just a musical hero, but in their kind of Yoko and John's kind of stand for peace and all that they've done, you know, to feel like he even heard us is just so thrilling.
And to inspire his final work. I mean, that is just like a goosebump for me. I get the goosebumps when I even thinking about that. That's quite an honor to have. Well, on that note, I want to take a pause because I don't think we can come back with anything better than that. So let's take a pause and come back, because I am chatting with founding member of the B-52s, singer, songwriter, vocalist Kate Pearson. When we do come back, we talk about making pop culture history and the milestone anniversary of one of Rolling Stone's magazine's 500 greatest songs of all time. Stick around. We'll be right back.
A careless driver can change your life in an instant. Do you know what to do or who to call? If you've been injured in a motor vehicle accident and do not have an attorney, call Auto Accident Help Desk for a free consultation. We can answer all of your questions and estimate the potential value of your case. Call Auto Accident Help Desk and connect with an expert personal injury attorney.
Call 800-320-9428. 800-320-9428.
Don't worry how to handle your medical bills, lost wages, and pain. We will get you the money you deserve.
They got me way more than the insurance company offered.
The consultation is free, and you do not pay any legal fees unless we win or settle your case. Make the smart call. If you've been injured in an auto accident, call Auto Accident Help Desk for a free legal consultation.
Call 800-320-9428. 800-320-9428. 800-320-9428.
I demand satisfaction. Oh! I challenge you to a duel.
Hey, a duel? Are you in a little extreme? Here, have a free beer.
Really? But you've never given anyone a free beer.
Yeah, I ain't never been slapped with no dueling glove before either.
Wow, a free beer. And I owe it all to a little glove slap. Glove slap, baby, glove slap. Mm.
Oh, welcome back to the Scene with Doreen. I am your host, Doreen Taylor, and I've had the honor of talking with the incredible singer, songwriter, musician Kate Pearson of B-52s. You know you have made history when you're in The Simpsons.
Exactly. That and being in a crossword puzzle.
Ooh, that's another moment. That's another pinch me moment we were talking about. Mm-hmm.
Wow, The Simpsons. That was amazing. Glove slap. And we were also in the Flintstones second movie, which was really fun.
Yes, you were. And I gotta give props. I don't know who came up with it, but they called you the BC-52s. I think that is so cute.
That was a really clever movie, and the sets were just amazing.
Now, was a lot of that CGI, or did they? You actually were around this world of the Flintstones?
Yes, everything was real. We went. There was a quarry in California. Every detail. I mean, if you were there, you would have seen more that was in the movie, because the signage, and Fred and I got to ride in one of those little carts that you motivate with your feet. That was really, really fun.
We had
a blast being in that movie. Yeah, it was hilarious.
Very cool. Now, speaking of Glove Slap or Love Shack and getting satisfaction, happy anniversary. Love Shack was released 35 years ago in 1989. It's undoubtedly B-52's biggest commercial hit. And yet I heard it was the last song to be recorded on the album and almost didn't make it on.
It almost didn't make it because it didn't really have that chorus. A lot of our songs, since we write by jamming, we'd have all these great parts, and we put the parts together like a collage. And, that part happened once. The Love Shack, and then the Love Shack. That was the chorus. And I said, I think we should have that more than once. And anyway, I mentioned it to John Was, who produced that song. And he did half of the Cosmic Thing record, and Nile Rodgers did the other half. Mm-hmm. So we rehearsed before recording it, and John Was also heard that. He said, oh yeah, that's the chorus, we have to put that in,
right?
And it just came together then, because before it was just wasn't gelling. It wasn't right. And Keith Strickland was like, I know there's something missing, and I just knew what it was. So once we put that in there, bam, it just seemed like, wow, this could be a hit. Mm-hmm. But of course we didn't know it. And when we wrote Cosmic Thing, we even said out loud, we don't care if this record is a hit. We're just doing this to heal from Ricky's death and to kind of bring, we just realized how precious it was that we had each other and that we were still able to create. So it was a surprise that it was a hit. And it actually was a little difficult to get airplay, but thank God for college radio and independent radio.
Yes.
We played it, and then we started touring, and we started playing smaller clubs, and then it started to be, going up the charts, and then we started playing bigger places, and pretty soon we were touring for a year and a half. So
amazing. Now, do you ever think about how your career path might have been different if the song just didn't end up on the album?
Well, Rome was a hit.
Yes.
But yes, that would have been really different. I mean, I think to have one song that, if you said, have you heard the B-52s, and people said, and you said Love Shack, mm-hmm. and they went, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Every single school dance, middle school, high school, that was the song. And it got everybody on the dance floor. In my generation, generations after me, that's the song.
And weddings.
Yeah,
Black Lobster really sticks with people, too. But
yes.
And Rome, of course, and Private Idaho and Planet Claire. There are a lot of songs. But Love Shack is the one pretty much that everyone's heard. And Fred introduces it sometimes to say, other people have covered this song, but, at wedding bands do it, but we do it better.
So. I would think so, yes. And, how many times has it been done? I wish somebody could calculate that for karaoke, in a karaoke bar, and I can't even imagine how many times that's been done.
I don't know how they do it, there's a part for everyone, I guess, in that.
It's true.
I still enjoy doing that when we play live. And we're doing these Vegas residencies, and of course we have to play Love Shack and Rock Lobster.
Mm-hmm.
People would just, you have to play it. But
yeah.
It never gets old to me, because the beat and the rhythm and just something about it that's fun to dance to. So I really enjoy, it's always like it's new somehow, even though we played it countless times.
I was going to ask that, but you've sort of asked and answered that question where, a lot of people have mixed feelings about their big hit, the one that, they're mostly known by. And sometimes it's like a double-edged sword where they have to play it, but do they really love it? It's nice to hear that you do still enjoy it.
I'm super grateful that we had a hit so recognizable. And also when anyone plays it, and sometimes, you enter a club, or not that I'm going to clubs much anymore, but, you go somewhere and they think, let's play Love Shack. And you don't really want to listen to it, but then I can't help but dance and kind of smile when I hear it.
Yes. Even. Don't we need more of that right now in this world? We need to smile and laugh and have a good time and just not worry for 5 minutes. And
I think that's what the B-52s, like, one of our legacy, I like to think of after time has passed. And we used to think, oh, no one's taking our lyrics seriously or whatever. But now I think the legacy that we have has been to bring joy and happiness to people. I mean, to be able to go to a concert or listen to music and kind of forget about your troubles, to really just have fun. Yes. I mean, having fun is really something essential, I think.
And so many people don't know how to do it anymore. I mean, it's kind of crazy that you would think it would just be an innate quality that people could just always find the fun in their heart. And some people have a very hard time doing it.
I think it's hard now. And I think it's hard for young people with all the distractions and social media and politics that are swirling around. And just it's a crazy time, but there's still lots of joy and lots of great music and lots of great people.
Amen. Amen.
And great things. So
speaking of great people, I do have to say, fun fact, Love Shack even gave RuPaul his big break. The music video featured RuPaul, who was relatively an unknown at the time.
Yes, we knew him way back when. He was in a band called anyone who wouldn't say the name, but no, it was called Wee Wee Pole.
Oh, love it.
When we first met him in Atlanta, he was just a superstar right off the bat. But we asked him to be in our video, and also Lady Bunny was in the video.
Yes. But, you know, you've been a very you've been vocal about discrimination against drag artists. And ironically, when you were first starting out in the New York underground scene, they had a rumor that you and Cindy were drag queens.
Well, I guess we were in a way.
In
drag. Let's just say we're in drag with our wigs and stuff. And we all kind of were. But yeah, there was a rumor that we were from England. We were drag queens, I guess, because no one could imagine a band from Athens, Georgia coming up and creating such havoc.
You know what? It was time. It needed to be done.
Yeah. And it was happening in all these little smaller cities and in Akron, Ohio, and in Athens, Georgia, and all these places where this creativity was just because punk and new wave, whatever you want to call it, was so much about doing it yourself and just starting from scratch and having fun and wearing whatever. And it wasn't really that sort of menacing thing that it's made out to be, you know, just.
Right. I agree. It had an image. I had a punk band on not that long ago, and they were talking about how they had this image that people would come to their concerts. They didn't know how to dress. They didn't know in the 80s. They didn't know what to do because they didn't know what punk was. They really didn't understand. They came in trash bags. They just didn't know what to wear, you know. So you kind of taught to the mainstream, which kind of is an interesting point. You've always appealed to fans, especially in the beginning, that were outside the mainstream, and they embraced you very early on. But then how did you reconcile the two things when suddenly songs like Love Shack and Rome were topping the charts and you became mainstream?
Well, there was the 80s, and that was, you know, when we look back on, a lot of people look back on what their look was in the 80s and feel like, ooh, but I just loved the big hair and I loved all the exaggerated look of the 80s. So I think just from punk to new wave to 80s, you know, we kind of went through all those eras and even into now. So I think we're unique. We don't really fit into any category. Whenever I see a documentary or something about punk or new wave, we're never in it because we're just sort of...
You were your own genre. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I see that even in your new music, which we're going to get to. But I do see that that has influenced you. You really touch on so many different genres. And back in the day, that wasn't usually embraced because they wanted to put you in a box and this is what you are. And it was easy to put a bow on it. But now it's applauded when you have an eclectic kind of sound.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's good to be able to. I mean, now, especially now, you can access, and young people especially have access to every genre, all, you know, through streaming and whatever you think about streaming, since we don't really get much revenue from streaming. But I do love streaming in that you can access world music and African music and just any kind of music you want. It's at your fingertips. And it's like now, it's not really even dated because there it is all there on your menu.
Yeah, it's true.
And incidentally, a trash bag is always a fashion option.
I love it. I love it. And shout out to Glad. I want an endorsement now because, you know, Glad trash bags, we're coming for you. But you're right.
I personally have never worn a trash bag, but I think Debbie Harry wore a trash bag.
I had her, Chris Nine on the show not so long ago. And we were talking all about, not about trash bags, but we did talk about Blondie and everything. And I know that you had a very special connection. You do have a very special connection with Debbie.
Love her. She is the coolest chick ever.
Yes. And I do want to, before we go to break, because I had this as an alternate question, but I really kind of want to know. At one point, the attention shifted away from the focus being on Fred, and it really sought out you and Cindy and put you in the spotlight with more lead vocals, especially on Rome, where Fred didn't even sing at all. Was that a conscious effort to make that evolution, or did it just naturally progress that way?
I think, we made a big effort to, even though it's pretty freeform, our jams, we did make an effort to balance things. And I think, you know, there have been sort of always been since the beginning girl songs. I mean, there's 52 Girls and Hero Worship and all the songs that we, Deadbeat Club, all the songs that, you know, the girl songs.
Right.
And Fred is sort of does the narrative in a lot of the songs of the B-52. So, and then a lot of things we do vocals back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Take apart, but a lot of the songs also have Fred as the main sort of narrator of the song. So I think it's important to have a balance to have some of the girl songs too.
I love it, and it sold. It was very popular. I got to tell you, look at Rome. I mean, that's also celebrating its 35th anniversary this year, and I mean that was just the two of you, and it was a huge hit.
Yeah, and the lyrics were written by our friend Robert Waldrop, who has written some other lyrics for the B-52s. So it was easier to write in a sort of more regular format than a usual B-52 song, which sometimes is a little chaotic. The song structure is not typical.
Right.
But this was a little more typical because it was a verse chorus and, you know, it was a little bit more standard.
Yes. What would they say? Radio friendly. I guess they would use radio friendly as a term.
Yeah.
Well, on the scene with today, I am chatting with founding member of the B-52, singer, songwriter, musician, and now solo artist Kate Pearson. When we come back, we dive into her newest solo album and we wrap it all up. We will be right back. Don't go anywhere.
No more mold. No more damage. No more outdated old bathroom. No more slipping and hurting. No more stress. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. Be stress-free. Call 800-827-4067. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. Ask about our military and senior discounts. Your dream bathroom in as little as one day. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a Neverclear glass treated door. Call now for free premium color upgrades. 800-827-4067. Call BCI Bath and Shower, the leader in bathroom remodeling. Be smart, safe, and stay a step ahead of inflation with our interest-free financing options. Call 800-827-4067. Love your bathroom with free upgrades. Call 800-827-4067. 800-827-4067.
Hey guys, are you loving the show? Do you want to see more of The Scene? Well, guess what? You can, because The Scene with Doreen is now a weekly segment on the nationally syndicated television show, The Daily Flash. The Daily Flash is your daily destination for trending stories, celebrity updates, and industry highlights. And it's now your home to watch The Scene with Doreen. You can turn us on and watch every Wednesday across the country. Check your local times and listings at thescenewithdoreen.com.
Thank you.
Oh, yes. Welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I am your host, Doreen Taylor, and all hour I have been chatting with the incomparable singer, songwriter, and musician Kate Pearson. Coming out of break, you just got a little taste of Evil Love, her second single off her new solo album, Radio and Rainbows. Kate, congratulations on your new solo album, Radio and Rainbows. All the songs are amazing, but I was really drawn into the song I just played coming out of break, Evil Love. It seems like a complete departure from your normal message of positivity, which we talked about. Was it fun?
Totally.
Was it fun drawing out the darker side?
Oh, yes. I don't really have a revenge fantasy against anyone, but I worked with, I collaborated with Blue McCauley, who's an amazing songwriter, and he's an artist, a solo artist as well. And I came in with this idea of a forgiveness, a song about forgiveness, and it wound up being Evil Love. And that's the power of collaboration when you minds, you know, meet. And he was like, forgiveness. What kinds of love are there? And then I said, evil, you know, I went through this whole list and finally I said, evil love. And he's, that's it. And then the story just unfolded. And he did come up with that, la la la, that's a sort of a spooky Rosemary's Baby.
I love it. And the music video is so cool. Yes. With the dark hair, you're going to more of the brunette look, and dark jet black, and it's a cool departure. It's very cool.
John Stapleton did, my friend did that whole video, and I just did it on a green screen, and he did the makeup as well. And it was so much fun what he did with that, putting me in the, you know, a motel, and you know, scary vibe of it. I love Halloween. I'm wearing my owl necklace, and the B-52s are going to be doing a Halloween show in DC, and then we're going to do a Day of the Dead show in Chicago. So I'm already ramping up for Halloween. But that song, I also have a song called Every Day is Halloween.
Yes, you do.
So I love the Halloween theme, but this was fun. Evil Love was fun because it was a story, and I haven't really written any songs like that that really had a storyline that wasn't really connected to me. Usually, if I write a story song, it's somehow about something in my past. And this one just was like a little Hitchcock film noir.
Yes, Lana Turner meets Psycho, I think, a little bit. You know, it was a little that dark, you know, film noir kind of, you know, even a little True Detective going on. But it was dark and brooding. And I am a big fan of minor keys. And it is interesting because you don't really record songs in minor keys, do you? You're mostly major keys.
Mostly major keys, yeah. And I do love that atmospheric song.
Me too.
You know, I love Lana Del Rey, that kind of atmosphere where you kind of feel a sweet sadness. But this one is a little more an upbeat.
Yes, maniacal sadness, more instead of melancholy sadness. Yes, you're a little more, yes. But I guess it could draw on you've done a lot of acting, and you have, even on stage, you are acting on stage. People don't realize there is a persona that you have on stage. So it does draw into a little bit more of maybe your acting skills.
Yes, yeah, I love doing the video. It was really fun doing that. And yeah, I think, you know, in my other life, I'm a sort of nerd bird watcher gardener.
Me too. I know we're very like, you know, sisters on that. I am a huge gardener, nature. I love all of that.
And, you know, health food nut and stuff. So, you know, the B-52s, the persona, all of us in the band really have a, you know, we're kind of quiet off stage. But then once we get on there, we just come to a different part of ourselves. And that's really fun because, you know, just being able to sort of express this creative persona on stage. And I don't find it being like a split, you know, too much of a split personality kind of thing. But it's just fun when you can get on stage and or write, you know, when you're writing something that's deeply from your subconscious or the collective unconscious, and it comes out and is through, you know, it's always exciting to see what comes out.
Yes. And speaking of that, you wrote and recorded two of your perhaps most personal songs on this album. It was Beauty of It All and Higher Place. I mean, those are really deeply personal.
Yes. And that's, again, the magic of just kind of what the unexpected when you're writing songs. I was in an emotionally abusive relationship. Mm-hmm. And when I got out of that, I met my wife, Monica. Mm-hmm. So Higher Place is really about that, and also finding their power, which I did, and found joy and power after that. And then, you know, the Beauty of It All is about meeting Monica and our relationship. So, and also I have a song called Wolves from Guitars and Microphones that's about our relationship too. About
Now, did she contribute? I read somewhere that she actually contributed some on this album.
Well, the first album, Guitars and Microphones, she did the video. She did the cover art.
Oh, wow.
This time she's focusing on her own art. She does pottery and she makes jewelry. She's a silversmith. So she's really focusing on that. So she didn't really take so much of a role in this album. So,
well, I mean, very, very talented. Talent finds talent. You know, I always say that the talented souls find each other in the cosmos through all the other, like the quagmire of crap. You know, the talent finds each other and the true good souls find each other.
But she also inspired me because when I worked with Sia, we had met Sia and befriended her. But Monica was the one. She knew that I had done this solo record previously that never came out. And she knew I wanted to do one. And she had really kind of asked Sia, you know, would she collaborate with me? And that's what started the whole ball rolling for my first solo record. And
I love it.
And I want to put out some of the songs from this, the one that never got out. But I have slowly, you know, been kind of mining that as well and writing new songs. So
wonderful.
I love the creative process. It just doesn't end.
Well, you got to mention, though, your voice. How is it after all these years, your voice sounds even better, if that's possible, than it did 30 years ago? What is your secret?
I do feel like I've tapped into something, especially on Evil Love.
Especially on Evil Love, yes.
Sort of powerful high notes. Yeah, I think working with Blue, it really, and Chris Braid and other collaborators, it just brought out this kind of vocal power that sort of was a little bit, it's like this much was not used yet. And I do warm up. I really try to take care of my voice. The B-52s have worn in-ear monitors for a long time, which really saves your voice.
Yes.
But I worked with a voice teacher during Cosmic Thing. She sadly passed away. Her name was Janet Frank. And she taught me how to just sort of use the breath and not to ever strain the throat. So that was something that really saved me, I think. And
yes, a lot of artists today, they don't understand that. And then you hear about nodes and vocal damage and having to take breaks from tour. I won't mention any names, but yeah, it's sad that some people don't learn that your vocal cords are your instrument and you have to take care of them just like you would a violin or, you know, a guitar. And they don't realize that.
It's an instrument and you have to, you know, take care of it. And it's kind of like working out as well. You can never just leave it. You know,
no.
You just really always need to fine tune.
Yeah. And I do love that you've taken the chest voice and you've been able to almost bring it up to a full chest voice on some of these higher notes. And it's a very full round sound on a very upper register kind of thing. That's hard to do for young people. I mean, good for you, girl. I mean, that's amazing.
Well, you know, it's hard for me to do. I did an acoustic, very small event for Paws Unlimited. It's a shelter for older dogs. And it was local here in near Woodstock. And I just, Ken Murie, who's been accompanied me, he's plays with the B-52s, and Tracy Wormworth also has been playing on my solo shows. She's played with the B-52s since Cosmic Thing.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it was just Ken and me, and we did this acoustic set, and it's very hard for me to sing softly.
Mm.
And, you know, he didn't have the guitar plugged in or anything. So I really have to learn, I think, to be able to also sing softly.
Pianissimo, fortissimo, right? All the terms. Yeah, you have to learn all of them.
I'm used to just belting it out. And I do, you know, I have soft moments on this record where I sing more softly. But to really, like, take it all down a notch, you know, and even the belting parts, you know, just kind of be able to sing it in a softer voice.
It's definitely different placement where you have to, you know, where you put the voice and how much air you put behind it. It does change a lot when you go acoustic. It's different.
Yeah.
Wow. Is it true, though? I want to say, is it true that your solo album, I heard rumors that your next solo album may lean more towards alternative country?
Yes, I'm thinking that. But, you know, then what you were talking about having all different genres, I keep writing these songs that don't fit into that. I already have a few country songs I've written, and then there are a couple that just have come up that really aren't country. So I always admired Beck, the way he was able to have
You
know, put all different genres into one album. And I'm not sure what I'm going to do, but I'm just letting the creative sort of energy flow and see what happens.
Yeah. And you know what? Put out a single. You don't always have to do an album. You want to do a country thing? Put out a single. It's the world of singles right now. I mean,
the day
of albums have kind of died, unfortunately. I hope it does come back. I love the storytelling of a full album. But
I know,
yeah.
No one listens that way anymore. And I was even thinking, wow, are we going to make CDs? Well, a record company did make CDs, but it's do you have a CD player?
It's true. I was going to hand them out for a certain event. I was going to do a charity event. And I was going to give everyone in a goodie bag a CD. And I was like, no, how are they going to play this?
Right. Well, it's good just to have. Right?
Yeah, it looks nice. But other than that, I mean, the vinyl is making a comeback, so maybe some vinyl. But I think a lot of the fans of B-52s would appreciate vinyl. But, you know, the
I
new generation.
Vinyl solo record, and it looks great. Yeah, the album cover looks really great. I'm really happy with it.
It does. And I have to be honest, I do own a record player. So I still have the old school record player.
Oh, I've got a boom box. I've got tape players. Yeah. I even found an old, like, DAT player in a box. But that's not coming back.
Well, I just want to say I am sure you're still riding high off the recent release of this Radio and Rainbows. But when you get a moment to catch your breath, what is next on tap for you? I know you're performing now. You're going to do some acoustic shows. What's coming up for you?
Well, I'm not doing an acoustic show. I'm doing a show with I started out doing one solo show with Tracy on bass and mm-hmm. Ken Murray playing guitar and keyboard. Switches back and forth depending on the song. And then we just this last show we did in Kingston, New York for O Positive Festival, I added drums.
Ooh.
And just not really loud, although it's hard to say to the drummer, don't play loud. But it really worked. I think it really needed it. So I'll be doing some solo shows and the B-52s, as I said, doing another Vegas residency. And we have the Halloween show. And we just did a Mosswood Meltdown show, a John Waters Festival in Oakland, California. And that was a blast.
Oh, yeah. How fun.
So there was some punk that Bush Tetras played. And it was just it's really fun. We love getting together still, and we still love each other, and it's still wonderful when we all kind of get together. So it's still mothership, but I'm really just thrilled to be doing solo shows. It's really a trip.
It's nice you're having your voice out there. I know that you've wanted to do this for a really long time, and for whatever reason, you didn't feel it was the right time, but it is now. And it's great that your voice is soaring out there and your own message is getting out there.
Thank you so much.
One question, just a curiosity. Is your keyboard still at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
No, that was at the Met.
It went to the Met and then they moved it, right? To the one in Cleveland. Is it still there?
It's still there, yeah.
So what I really want to know is your keyboard is good enough to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but the B-52s haven't gotten in yet. What the heck is going on there?
Well, we're waiting.
I always wonder what goes into that. Matt and my producer, Matt and I, we always do a recap of the year and we announce like the winners of, you know, who's inducted that year. And I'm always baffled a little as to who. And if the B-52s aren't in, I don't know who should be in. I swear.
I know. But at the same time, you have to look at who's not there.
It's true.
And that will give you all these amazing people are not in the Hall of Fame. So I just don't really believe in competition.
Awards. Yeah. Yeah.
They're grading musicians and stuff, but I wouldn't mind being in there. That would be great. The Go-Go's got in, so I think we're next.
Sure. I mean, I had Andrew Ferris from NXS on here. They're still not in there. And another one, you know, if they were playing huge stadiums and if they're not in, I don't get it.
Yeah. But so you can't all, why not all of us be in it?
I agree. I know they want to keep it, you know, like this thing, but you're right. I think certain people shouldn't even be looked at before others have their way in. But that's my personal opinion, and I'm going to be on the B-52's campaign to get you guys in there because you deserve it more than anybody on that list. I believe you guys deserve it.
Thank you, Joe.
Well, you're groundbreaking. You really, really paved the way and did something that nobody had the courage to do in that time. And you did it with such amazing class, and your legacy is just incredible.
Well, I think breaking the also the male dominated kind of, although it's not so much now, but I mean, there was a time when the rock and roll was just so male dominated. And, that's changed a lot. So I'm happy for that. And just rock on.
Amen. And power to the women. I mean, really, there needs to be still more. We still have some catching up to do. I still see there's inequalities there, but we're getting closer.
Well, radio, I still see a lot of inequality in radio play when I'll hear 10 male artists and then they'll play one. especially in country radio.
Yes. I actually had someone who wrote a book about that whole, you know, the feminism of rock and roll and these pioneers that came in and how crazy it was several years ago where they wouldn't, there was a quota, you know, you couldn't have, we couldn't, they couldn't play a certain amount of female.
It's yeah, not back to back either. So
no.
Still there, I think, because when I listen to radio and I listen to radio all the time, you know, I frequently think, well, when are they going to play a woman? I'm just like waiting.
Amen. Amen. And there's so many amazing women out there right now with their voices that need to be heard, including yours. And I am so glad I got to hear you for the past hour. What a treat for me. I want everyone to get the new album, Radio and Rainbows, available at katepearson.com and available anywhere you can buy and stream music. Go on her website, check out her tour dates. I just want to thank you for the gift you have given to the musical community and to the world in general. You're just incredible.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed talking to you. And
thank you so much, Kate, for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you to my guest today, the incredible Kate Pearson. And thank you again for tuning in to The Scene with Doreen. I'm here each and every week across the country bringing you the best interviews from the entertainment world and beyond. Get connected with me on social media and on our official website, thescenewithdoreen.com. And tune in next week so you can find out what's going on. Bye!